This is a very interesting Bible reading. Seek and you shall find, knock and it shall be opened. You know, just whatever I want, whatever I put my mind to, then I get to have it. The Bible promises like this, whatever you pray for, even to tell the mountain to go jump in the sea, whatever it is, you can just ask for it and it will happen. And Swamiji was very fond, or Master used to tell the joke about the man who had a mountain that was blocking his view out his kitchen window, and he told the mountain to go, and the next morning he came out and it was still there. And the man said, I knew you would still be there. Which is to say, he was breaking the first rule that the Bible put there, which is that you have to pray believing. But then, later on in the reading, right here, after the poor boy drowns at the Ranchi school, every time I hear that story, I just think, that was a pretty tough way to learn the lesson. You know, you project actual experience all the way out into what a horrible moment that must have been, and that poor man who thought he had the power to do that but didn't. And then Swami says belief is not enough. So in those contradictions is where we're finding what's really meant here. You have to have that one-pointed concentration which leads to self-realization, is how he puts it in the reading there. But you have to have that one-pointed concentration that causes what you desire to be in tune with God's will. Because God is not going to allow us to act against the cosmic plan. But even more profoundly, to see how that this works together. The premise of what's written in the Bible is that we have a desire to be in tune with God. That if we're asking, what we're asking is we're asking of Divine Mother, we're asking of that cosmic force, that it's not merely my desire to impose my will upon the world, but that I want to act in concert with what the Divine wants of me. The great difficulty that we all face is summarized perfectly by the whispers. I hear the voice of God saying, come home, come home, but I also hear the tumult of everything else inside of me that I also want. And the entire dilemma of the spiritual path is the way these two realities just forever dance within us. I remember when I was younger, there were sometimes movies about hot rodders. These are words, as the years pass, I realize how much of an anachronism I gradually become. In some broadcast that I was giving, I was talking about some of the experiences that we had in court during the 1990s when Ananda was faced with litigation, was sued from the outside. And I said part of the problem was that we all thought that court drama was like Perry Mason. And I had the tech work for all my broadcasts is done by millennials. Afterwards, they asked me, who was Perry Mason? Now, of course, Perry Mason was this huge drama, this detective drama that I with my biscuits and my milk as a child, I sat and watched it. And, it, you know, right always triumphed, usually in some dramatic way. And litigation didn't last for years, it only lasted for 30 minutes, and it was just all exactly like that. But there's just all these references that just become sort of part of the way we expect things to be. Popular culture is one way of describing that. We sort of get this thought in our mind that this is the way that things are going to be. But really, that's Maya itself acting on us all the time. We might be able to think if it's coming out of a television program, it's just that, and if we can remember that it's fiction, although many times people's whole lives is based on fictional examples of the way life is supposed to run, but everything that is outside of the still small voice of spirit is popular culture persuading us that this is the way it's supposed to be? And whether it's your books or my books or the television or the animations or whatever it is that's happening at this time, most of what we think is true is just because that's the way it's always been. That's just the way it rolls along, and people think this is how it should be. Nowadays, in our extraordinarily dramatic political world that we live in, with everybody standing up and trying to assert their truth over someone else, if someone else's truth isn't yours and you don't know who Perry Mason is, and they're standing there telling you, but it's so remarkable how everybody makes sense to themselves from the inside, don't they? In the old days when people used to wear these, remember these? These are watches, right? Instead of pulling the thing out of your pocket to see what time it is. And they were wildly variant, everybody's watch. And Ramakrishna used to use the example, another great example that doesn't mean anything anymore. Everyone thinks their watch is right, just like that. Of course, that's just everybody thinks their watch is right. This is how we move through the world. And the problem is, even when we begin to realize that my point of view was just arbitrary, it was just the way I was raised, it was just all the values that were inculcated to me or that I brought over from whatever lifetime, and then gradually we get in contrast to that, we begin to get this, first it becomes as a feeling and then it gets a deeper and deeper intuition that there's some consistent thread here that even though, and even if we can't articulate these things, we know these things. Even though last time I was in Africa and this time I'm in Europe and I've been on other planets and all different kinds of cultures I've been in, there's some consistent thread running through all of this. When I first was introduced to self-realization, and then even more powerfully when I met Swami Kriyananda, it was like a lifetime of standing on the edge, just desperately seeking for the consistent thread. I could feel that the consistent thread was happiness. I didn't understand yet bliss or joy, but I understood that there was suffering and then there was happiness. And that the thread I wanted to find and hold was the thread of happiness. But I couldn't find anyone around me who had more than a Perry Mason opinion of what that happiness was about. And we go through countless incarnations like this until it assumes what Master wonderfully called in Autobiography of a Yogi, a certain anguishing monotony. Those two words put together, if you wordsmith as much as I do and you think about these things, the word monotony implies a certain dullness, doesn't it? But the word anguishing is like a wholly different kind of word. And part of the genius of that description is that is actually exactly what it feels like. Again, these are like intuitive subconscious knowings that we have. They're not always on the surface. It's like, oh, here we go again with absolute tragedy. And it's a contradiction in your mind that, oh, here we go again with absolute tragedy. Here comes another war. Here comes another time when my house gets blown up by a bomb. Oh, here's where I get orphaned as a child. And the anguish and the same keeps coming to us. And then there comes a point where the divine is like this. I said to Swami Kriyananda once after I'd been living at Ananda Village for a number of years, and before I met him, I was living in the city. I was actually living here in this area, and I was also briefly in San Francisco. I was beginning to study spiritual teachings. I was going every week to East West Bookshop in Menlo Park then, because that was the only source you had for metaphysical things. I was reading, just trying to break through. And I just couldn't really get anywhere. Even though I had all the possibility and I believed it, But I couldn't cross over into that point of what Swami calls real power, where there was real power behind these ideas. Then I met Swami Kriyananda. And there's many different ways to describe what his aura was like to me. But among other things, it was the power. It wasn't just, these are nice words and I believe them. It was, this is what it looks like when you say I believe versus I believe. I know that this power is there. And what the Bible is urging upon us by declaring, if you knock, if you seek, if you ask, it will come to you, is not saying, oh, goody, I'm going to knock, I'm going to seek, I'm going to ask. Because if one does that, it's generally a recipe for disappointment. I mean, how many people, when someone you love has been sick, have prayed for that loved one to recover and they didn't? How many people do we know who just outright tragedy has struck their life, and no matter how much we pray and believe the possibility of a miracle, that miracle doesn't come? So what do we do when that begins to happen? Do we doubt the word of the masters? Is it that they're just giving us a false promise so that, you know, they'll get more people in their church? What is that song that Swami has? Preach the lighter news. Don't disappoint the gentle folk. Our church needs better pews. That's one of the joke songs that Swami sings. And all of us who share Master's teachings, you gradually have to learn that you have to say the truth. Whether people like it or not, the truth doesn't change merely because of people's opinions about it. But what the Bible is promising us by just declaring it unequivocally like that, just an unequivocal statement, this is the power, is that we have to ask ourselves, maybe I haven't quite understood what is meant. And we move, or, and it happens for many lifetimes, we sort of go toward God. He disappoints us, and so we'll show him. We'll just abandon him at this point, won't we? You know, no more dedications to your temple. You know, I'm not going there anymore. And we become just stalwart anti whatever we tried out and failed. Or the anguishing monotony really gets to us, and we think, what am I not understanding? If that mountain hasn't moved, but the mountain will move, what am I not understanding? And that's where that word, pray believing, comes in, as contrast to the man who believed he could take those children across the waterfall, and Master knew that he could take those children across the waterfall. And it's the feeling, the word they used was power, but belief has to be translated, and these are just words, so we have to understand what it must mean. It means that feeling we have when we know we are in tune and moving with the Spirit. And then we just simply know that it can be done. I remember when we were proposing a certain project in the middle of the litigation, the last year of the 12 years that we were struggling in that. And we had this idea that emanated from our community here, that we would do this public, we called it an educational project. We would go to where the other spiritual organization that was suing us was having a big convention, and we would pass out literature and stand on the sidewalk and communicate with them about what was going on. Some people called it a demonstration. We called it an educational project. It was exceedingly controversial within the world of Ananda, just stunningly so, because it was so aggressive. And Swamiji stood right in the middle of everybody's ideas about whether it was a good idea or not. He was vintage Kriyananda. He was so perfect because he supported everyone, and their ideas were secondary to his support for them. So when people would complain or raise doubts, he would say, I love this, I understand why you feel that way. Isn't that perfect? Because he did. And so it went back and forth and back and forth about whether we should do it. And finally, we're on the phone with Swami and said, Sir, do you think we should do this or should we not do it? And we went a little bit, and then I said, Swamiji, the idea to do this, and this is the phrase I use, came to me in that way. I said, it doesn't happen to me that often, but it came in that way where I knew it would work. He had expressed concern that it wouldn't be effective for various reasons. I said, it came in that way that I knew it would work. And it was so interesting. Swami's entire demeanor on the phone completely changed. Well, then, of course, you have to do it. And it was just as simple as that. And, of course, then we did go forward, and it did work because it came in that way. Now, I'm standing up here of decades of spiritual life, and most things do not come in that way. But there are times when we know that this is not belief in the casual sense. This is knowing that the power is there. And if I remain in tune with that power, and by no means is the mere fact that it comes in that way a guarantee that it's going to work. I have had a couple of very dramatic where it came in the right way, and then I managed to mess that up completely. Because there's no guarantee. It's a moving target. This is what the Bhagavad Gita says to us today. You know, over and over again, we put our attention toward the spirit, and then the tumultuous desires and noises of the world come in. And even though we think we're still heading in the right direction, we're listening to ourselves now. We're not listening to that voice. But all we ever need is even just one experience of what it feels like to know. And then all of a sudden the Bible makes sense. And that's what Swami also states. Even the seemingly impossible becomes possible if we feel it from God, and then if we can hold the inspiration. Swamiji, who was such a marvelous creative artist and writer and, you know, composer and so many different things, he commented, he wrote a beautiful melody for the old Italian version of the prayer of St. Francis, which actually we sing at the end of our services, make me an instrument of your peace. You know, where there is hatred, may I share love. Swami wanted to write a melody to that for many years. Finally, he found the original Italian of Francis's poem and wrote a beautiful a cappella melody for it, which I can't possibly sing. I don't know the Italian, and I can't sing that well anyway, but it's a beautiful melody. About the same time that Swami wrote it, a popular singer who was named Donovan, who's probably unknown to any of you now, but was a part of my life, he was a sort of somewhere between folk and pop music. He also wrote a melody for simple English words of that same poem. The first line of both melodies was the same. Isn't that interesting? Just the first few measures, it was the same melody. Swami felt that he'd heard Francis sing it. And Swami was kind enough to say, I think he heard Francis singing it also, but he couldn't sustain the inspiration. So Swami's point of view about that song is that after that first part, it just gradually collapses because it's not enough to receive it. We also have to stay in tune. It's not enough to read it in the Bible and decide, I will take the boys across the waterfall. Every step of the way, it has to always be, is this the right thing? Is this the right thing? When we made an effort in 1981 to turn what is Ananda Village into a legal California city, because we wanted to gain control over our own land use, and the only form in California that had control besides a county, which we couldn't be, was a municipality, a city. So ludicrous as it was on certain levels to just take 900 acres of land there with 125, or when we must have had 250 residents, and call it a California city, at the very end, it wasn't until the last, darn it, I realized that we were going to become a California city, S-I-D-D-H-I. City is the Sanskrit word for spiritual power, but Ananda City is what we started calling it at the end. But in any case, It was a huge effort, went on for 18 months, ended in a monumental hearing in which everybody, 800 people in the room, everybody was against us. Six of the seven board members all voted against this total collapse. It was wrong. It was unfair. They violated our freedom of religion rights. We were going to sue. I mean, this is me, like, in front of the cameras that night. The next morning, or the 2 days later, camera crew comes up to talk to Swami Kriyananda from the city of Sacramento. I take them up in the car to Swami's. We're going to sue. We're going to do this, like this. Swami sits in front of their cameras and says, "We're really not going forward anymore. This was really the right decision. I have to take the camera crew back down. I'm telling them, of course it was the right decision. It was just what we should do. Why would we sue like this?" Then I drive back up the hill. I open the door to Swami's house. "What?" He said, "Well, there are no telephones. There's no email." He had no way of reaching me. Just like this. The news reporters didn't even flinch because they interview politicians all the time. So it's the right and left side of your mouth. Just in 1 minute, didn't mean anything to them. "Swami, why aren't we going forward? Last night we were going to, or the night before, we were going to take it all the way to the Supreme Court if we needed to." He said, "Well, I was meditating," he said, "and I asked Master whether we should go on. And Master said no." So I said, "Okay." But then I said, "I've been working on this full time for 18 months. Why didn't Master say that to me?" Swami said, "Did you ask?" I said, "No." "No, sir, I just assumed it. And then I said out loud, "Serious mistake, huh?" He said, "Yeah. It's not enough to be given the power. We have to moment by moment. Is this now we don't want to keep digging up the plant. It's not like you plant the seed and then pull it up and hold it up to the light and ask God if he still wants it in the ground. But even as we move every step of the way, we mustn't assume. We have to always be walking in that light." This is why Swami puts all of these together. The Gita says, the mind focuses, then it gets pulled away. The mind focuses and then gets pulled away. The other teacher thought he could do it, but was he really standing in that? Is this easy? No. That's why they call this the pearl of great price. Is it worth every ounce of energy? Is there anything else worth doing? Is there anything else more valuable or more ultimately beneficial for our lives? What we're talking about is very simple: attunement. Do we live for ourselves, or do we live for God? And even after we decide to live for God, how determined are we? How many times will we let the mind, wild and wandering, rush away, the heart rushes away, and then we pull it back over and over and over until gradually what was night at first becomes day to the yogi. And what was day suddenly becomes night. And we become someone else. Nothing in this world is fixed, least of all our consciousness. And ultimately, there is only one reality, which is the power and presence of God within us. And everything that we truly seek, that's where we'll find it. God bless you.
Life is a dream, time like a stream, carries our burdens away. Never despair, joy's everywhere, love can befriend you today. Free from all care, like birds on the air, soar above griefs and worries, seek joy and and became. Often on earth, things of great worth, worldly ambitions defy. Sometimes a friend helps us ascend up from life's cares to the sky. Love is a star, though shining afar. It can guide us and help us toward light to draw nigh. Love is a star, it can guide us and help us toward light to draw.